Suns can do a little celebrating with a W here.
For the game! Got it! Off the glass! Devin Booker!
You're listening to The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns show, part of Almighty Baller Radio.
So last week we opened the show, Espo, and I gotta tell you, I am really disappointed in our listeners. Because we opened the show talking about NBA playgrounds and a call to action, as they call it in the radio industry, where you're asking for the listener to do something. And that is, if you play NBA playgrounds, so let us know whether or not it's worth buying. I did the same call to action during the middle of an episode of the Drive and Dish podcast, and we heard back from a ton of people. Not one person hit us up on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel and told us whether or not they were enjoying NBA playgrounds.
Well, that's because we have a bunch of old people like Dave King who listen to the show that think Pong and Atari are what video games are, and think NBA Playgrounds is where the NBA players of today grew up playing basketball.
I mean, I got to tell you, so I did end up downloading the game, and it is fantastic. It's a little bit more like NBA Streets than NBA Jam, though. The part that I like about it is that, so in NBA Jam, you just make every shot. It doesn't really matter. But in NBA Playgrounds, your shot release actually does matter.
See, I hate that. I downloaded it as well because late one night after the baby went to bed, I couldn't sleep. And I thought, you know what? Tim's talked about this damn game at least twice now on the podcast. So I'm going to download it and see what it's like. And I downloaded it on Steam on my computer and played it and could not make a damn shot because I'm not used to having to have my release perfect. I just NBA Jam, you just literally fire it up. And I'm used to A and B. Like, I sound like Dave. I'm talking about how Sega is what I'm used to. And I'm going to stop before I give him ammunition next week to just call me an old man.
So no, I think it's fantastic. If you haven't downloaded the game yet, by all means, go ahead and download it. Also, Devin Booker, he tweeted out this week that his first team All-NBA would be Draymond Green, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, and John Wall, which is it was slight variation from the actual first team All-NBA. Most notably, no Draymond Green and no John Wall in first team All-NBA. But my question to you, Espo, is if you had a vote, who would have been your first team All-NBA?
See, I'm sorry, but I don't care about all NBA. But you know the saying, all or nothing? I'm going to give you the nothing NBA team. And it's led by the Walking Dead, Brandon Knight. He'd be on that team for sure. Luol Deng of the Lakers, I think I'd throw him on there. Chandler Parsons, he's definitely getting a slot on the nothing NBA team. And I'd probably go Jeff Green. And, I'd probably go Evan Turner. I think that would be my nothing NBA team. Maybe I throw a Roy Hibbert on there if you're going to make me go with a center. I think he could make it on there.
It's funny, Jeff Green. So that guy, Jeff Green, man, he had $15 million last year to be quite possibly the most mediocre player in the NBA.
Just wait. Brandon Knight's going to be about that number next year, and he'll surpass Jeff Green. Enjoy it because it may be on the Suns bench.
The difference, though, is that like Jeff Green keeps getting these contracts where this was, Brandon Knight's first $15 million deal.
Oh, some GM will take a chance on Brandon Knight likely and take that $15 million deal thinking they can fix him because you know what? The NBA is much like bad relationships in college. Everybody thinks that they can fix the person with the problem before they realize, no, that's just the person.
Or they're just the problem themselves.
Well, that could be the case too. The Suns could be the problem. I don't know. We have seen enough disgruntled people come and go in the last 5 years to make you wonder, are they the problem in the relationship?
So I want to talk about relationships really quick before we get out of this intro, Espo.
And are we by the way, about ours?
Yeah, actual relationships. Right. So, I'm in my mid-30s. I live at home in a 2-bedroom apartment, studio in one room. I have a cat and a dog, and I'm laying there in bed last night, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe it's me.
See, I thought Dave's life was depressing, but you just took me to a whole new level of sad,
My whole time through my late 20s and early 30s, I kept thinking, man, what is wrong with these women? And then as I'm laying in bed at, 10:30 at night on a Friday with my cat and my dog, I'm like, no, the problem's me. So
the problem is if the cat and the dog leave the room and you're all alone, then the problem's you. Then you really need to take stock of your life. I actually told you this yesterday about our relationship. We were talking about the show, and I think I'm going to go Kobe game 7 against the Suns today. And I'm simply, every time you say something, I'm just going to volley it back to you. And you get to do all the talking in today's episode just to make you feel better about yourself. How does that sound to you?
Unfortunately, so during our email conversation yesterday, when we were talking about it, I was able to send you the meme of somebody rolling their eyes, but it's not something I can do for the listeners that are listening right now. But if you could see a big eye roll on my part, you would be able to.
We are PHX.
You are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Sun show, part of Almighty Baller Radio. You can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Sun Solar Panel. You can follow us individually on Twitter. You can find Greg Esposito at Espo. You can find myself at Radio Tim NBA and Dave King, who is not with us today because he is making a long drive back from Colorado, I should say. You can follow him individually at Dave King NBA. Last week, we debuted a new shirt for the Sun Solar Panel merch, which you can find on our website at Sun's Show and Sun's Podcast.com, as well as a pinned tweet on our Twitter page. But what we had was a Alan Williams Big Sauce shirt, and it was kind of a hit. We sold a couple of them. This week, we have a different one. Greg, what inspired you to come up with this design, or to help the person that was coming up with this design for the shirt?
Well, if you've listened to the show, you know I've given Brandon Knight a nickname here. The Walking Dead. So we have a Walking Dead Brandon Knight shirt that I think you're all going to enjoy. That's now my favorite shirt in the merch store because it's a dumb nickname I came up with about 6 episodes ago, and it's just kind of stuck now, and now we got merch for it. And I'm sure if Brandon Knight ever sees it or ever listens to this, he's probably going to want to kick my ass.
I'm going to have to make sure to at him in a tweet.
Please don't. Please don't. Brandon Knight is a very nice guy. That's the problem with all this. I like Brandon Knight, the human. It's Brandon Knight, the basketball player and the contract that frustrates the heck out of me.
Following him on social media, and he's posting a lot of pictures of him working out. And one thing I've noticed is none of it. And correct me if I'm wrong, none of it has been with other Suns players.
No, not that I've seen. I don't know. This time of year, I won't judge anybody because they all kind of go their separate ways for the May month. And then usually if you're going to work out with the guys after Memorial Day, you come back and you work out June, some of July, and you're around. Eric Bledsoe last year was the rare exclusion to that, where he was here literally day one after the season through the next season. He was here except for a handful of days when he went back to Alabama. So I don't know. I try not to read too much into that stuff in May, but if it continues over the summer, I think you can start reading into it a little bit.
TJ Warren posted a picture up of him working out with a group of players. Notably in that group of players was Paul George.
Yeah, don't read anything into that either. Unless we think TJ Warren's going to the Pacers, but I wouldn't read anything into Paul George coming to Phoenix, that's for sure.
No, for sure. It is nice to see him working out with some high caliber talent, though. Yeah. And we're going to get into a little bit of TJ Warren talk, and I guess I want to tease this now before we get into the main chunk of the episode. But next week we are going to be doing a Eric Bledsoe Tinder trade edition. This was inspired by the episode we had last week with a Brandon Knight Suns Tinder edition. So we are going to be going over a whole bunch of different Eric Bledsoe trade Tinder editions where you can swipe right or swipe left, whether or not you would do the trade or not do the trade. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, because if we know anything about good podcasting, it's beat a good segment idea to death by doing it over and over again. So get ready for plenty of Suns Tinder all summer long.
And by the way, hello to everybody on Dash Radio.
What up, Dash? You're still around, huh? I thought we would have creeped out Playboy Radio by now and they would have kicked us out of this network, but we haven't yet. So congratulations. We're glad to be here another week on Dash.
So the one thing you can do with the podcast that really helps us out, besides buying a t-shirt, is by leaving us a 4 or a 5-star review on iTunes. And each week we're going to read one of them. And this week we have one from...
I actually prepared in advance, so no stalling this week. We have one from Soccer Stud. He says, thank you. Being a Suns fan in the Cleveland area, I love listening to your podcast. It gives me solace while all my friends are talking about making it to the finals while my guys are sitting at home. 5-star rating.
Now, was that your best radio voice?
No, that was not my best. You want me to do it again in radio voice?
Yeah.
Soccer Stud says, being a Suns fan in the Cleveland area, I love listening to your podcast. It gives me solace while all my friends are talking about making it to the finals while my guys are sitting at home. 5-star review. That's my cheesy radio voice there for you.
There is a term for that, but Espo, you know I work in radio, and something that's really trending in radio right now is actually the opposite of the radio voice.
It's the Tim Tompkins?
Yeah, the one that puts you to sleep. But they want you to be conversational and they want you to sound like a human being. But that the days of the big boomy announcer voice, for the most part, that's really gone in radio and you don't hear that nearly as much as you used to.
Well, that's probably a good thing because it has become very cliche and I only go to that that voice when I really want to just make fun of some stuff. So. Not that I was making fun of Soccer Stud. I apologize. It's not what I was doing. The concept of me reading somebody else's words is what I was making fun of.
The big question this week, and I guess I'll just start this off with Suns Lottery came and happened. I was sitting up that night, and I was really looking forward to it. I was retweeting a bunch of people that were throwing up the hashtag #WeArePhoenix, #WeArePHX, I guess I should say, and retweeting a bunch of our listeners who had their good luck charms up and about, all that good stuff. And, you know, I was feeling really optimistic about it. And I knew that you were going to be recording that episode. And I ended up randomly having the next morning off of work. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I'm up, I'm definitely going to actually hit Espo up and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to be available to do this episode. And then the lottery happened. And I was like, I'm going to take a step back before I give that instant reaction because I don't always love instant reactions. I don't always think your instant reaction is the best reaction. But I want to... And I still find this funny, and we're going to have to possibly bleep some of this out, but I wanted to give some of the instant reaction to the Suns Lottery from Suns Reddit the night that it happened.
Look, before you go into that, I highly regret getting behind the mic on that night too. Let me just say that. So if you want some entertainment and you want to see a meltdown, read my Twitter account and then listen to the emergency group therapy session episode of the Solar Panel. You'll hear a very dejected Espo.
I really appreciated you having somebody from Tucson on. So I'm from Tucson. I miss Tucson. I always think about the U of A and Fourth Avenue and breakfast burritos. So when I found out it was somebody from Tucson, I was super excited. I thought it was a fun episode. But here is a list of the titles of the Reddit threads on Suns Reddit just after the draft. Fuck. The NBA is rigged. Fourth pick, are you kidding me? Shit's rigged. The NBA is rigged. Rigged. Fuck. Official, get out of here, Lakers fans thread. And I felt like that really summed up the mood for everybody as soon as all of that went down. I don't know about you, Espo. I've had 5 days really, to digest this. And I got to tell you, I feel a lot better than I did initially.
Well, I'll go back to draft lottery night. And I was planning on leaving my office early so I could be home and watching it. And instead, I didn't get out of my day job in time. So I'm driving home. And if any of you know, I work in the north part of Scottsdale, and I live in Far East Mesa, so that's a very long drive. So
I threw the draft lottery on through the Bluetooth in my car, and you're going through it, and you're trying to mentally in your head keep track of, okay, well, this team's supposed to be there, this team's supposed to be there, and I start to realize, okay, somebody's jumped up here because it's not making sense. And they get to envelope number four, and just internally, you know what's coming. You just know what's coming, but you're not prepared, even though I was prepared all week that they were going to be, heck, I was prepared for 2 months that it was going to be the fourth or fifth pick. And I almost swerved off the road when they said the Suns, out of just anger, you know, when you hear it, because you're sold a bill of goods pretty much all year that we're going to lose on purpose to wind up with one of the top two picks in the draft, because this is going to change our franchise. All right. We bought into that. That's why fans suffered through the kind of bad basketball that they suffered through. And, you know, I won't lie. The draft lottery feeling, it's the same feelings I had the last 5 years. The difference is, you know, I can actually express it now. I joked on the emergency podcast, there should be a segment on the show of things I couldn't say when I was working for the team. Well, you know, actually reacting to the draft lottery where it's anger and panic was something you couldn't do. You had to say, you know what, the fifth pick or fourth pick, there's a lot of great talent there. This is really a five-player draft, and we're going to get one of the top talents that can have a giant impact on this franchise. Like, that's the line. Like, and go look at the quotes. That's what you're hearing from anybody associated with the Suns. Well, for me, as anybody that read my Twitter account that night knows, I didn't quite go that route. Now, having stepped back from it, there is talent there, but now, again, luck is going to have to come into this. You're going to have to get lucky to get a Josh Jackson, which I think is the top talent that they're going to have a shot at here. He's the best two-way player in this draft, but now you have to hope Philly, sitting at number three, because we're going to assume one and two are going to be point guards, right, to the Celtics and the Lakers.
Hey, that's a big assumption, and that's something I was talking about on the Drive Niche podcast earlier. But I was asking, is there actually any indication from the Lakers that they are going to be taking Alonzo Ball, or is this a completely media-driven narrative because his dad has been so outspoken? Like, why do we think for sure the Lakers are going to take Alonzo Ball when it's a little bit of a repetitive position for them?
It seems like a Magic Johnson kind of move. It's big, it's splashy, it's LA, and if anybody can handle LeVar's personality, it's Magic Johnson, who has a larger personality, and the Lakers franchise, who in and of itself embody a much larger personality than a LeVar and Lonzo ever will be. He's the hometown kid. I don't see the Lakers not picking him. He seems to fit check all the boxes that the Lakers are probably looking for. The team I'm not convinced that's going to take a point guard is the Celtics. Because if you really think Isaiah Thomas is a star and superstar, why would you rush to take a point guard? Do they trade out of that, and do you trade that pick to the Bulls or somebody, the Pacers, somebody where you can get an established star as well as some draft picks? I don't know. I think the Celtics are actually the wild card here that could change all the dynamics as to what happens at four. Now, when it comes to the 76ers, their team, that also, you're not quite sure what they're going to do, because the Colangelos aren't hinky. They probably want to win now. So is there a chance they trade the pick to try to get somebody established and move on there? I don't know. There's a lot, and that's why if you're sitting at one or two and you're the Suns, you know you're guaranteed to have your pick of the kind of guy you want. When you're sitting at four, you're now at the mercy of a lot of different factors, and that's the biggest thing that worries me. I still believe that Ryan McDonough can find great talent. He's proven that in drafts, and whether it's early in the draft outside of Alex Len, and I still don't hold him accountable for that because it was 2 weeks into his GM-ship here with the Suns. But I just, you look at it and I think you'll find talent, but the question is who's going to be left on the board.
And that I'm not worried about. And that's the part of this. So if we want to follow the media driven narrative that the Celtics are going to take Markel Fultz and, you know, to kind of piggyback off your point earlier, I don't believe that the Celtics are convinced that Isaiah Thomas is the point guard of the future for him. If you look last year, Danny Ainge was actively on the phones wheeling and dealing virtually anybody to try and get an extra pick in last year's draft. And that included an Isaiah Thomas, coming up on a contract year, and whether or not they want to extend him and give him that $180 million for 5 years when they're so much worse defensively. I'm not sure that that's the case. So, you know, but what we can kind of follow that and say, yes, that the Celtics are probably going to take Markel Fultz. We'll go with the media-driven narrative that, yes, the Lakers are probably going to take Lonzo Ball. And that's where all this gets really interesting, because you have the Sixers right now who have a absolutely loaded front court with Joel Embiid, with Dario Saric, Ben Simmons, Rashard Holmes, Robert Covington, Jahlil Okafor, if I didn't mention him already. And while we've seen a pattern from the Sixers of taking best player available, that was when Danny Ainge was, or not Danny Ainge, that's when Sam Hinkie was drafting. Well, now they have the Colangelos up there. And yes, they took the number one pick in Ben Simmons last year, but that was, you know, of course you're going to take the best talent at number one. You just, that's the way that always goes. So if you look at their needs, they don't need another player who can't shoot. And Josh Jackson, you know, frankly, he can't really shoot. So there are some better options for them. You know, so there is a chance that they trade back to get a Monk. They need a point guard. You know, is Smith a good option for them there? Is Fox a good option? Fox probably isn't, but is he an option? I've seen a lot of boards saying that the Sixers are going to take a Tatum because they need a scorer next to a Ben Simmons, who, you know, his Ben Simmons greatest attribute is being a distributor. So I don't think it's like set in stone that they're going to take a Josh Jackson. But that being said, if they do take a Josh Jackson, the Suns have plenty of talent still. They have Tatum, who I don't dislike Tatum. I think he can provide a lot, but the Suns already have a TJ Warren who kind of does the same thing. I'm really enamored by an Isaac, who I think is incredible defensively, that could play, that can defend 2 through 5 just fine.
Yeah, he could be really, could want to be in your center of the future if you go that route.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are some really fun lineups I think you could run out there with Dragan Bender and an Isaac that would make it so the Suns are able to basically switch anything. You know, so you're going to have a lot of teams that are like slipping screens, but the Suns can address that when that happens. There's also a couple of really good point guards in the draft. You have your Smith, you have your Fox. So even if the Suns don't get a Josh Jackson, like, an Isaac or a Fox or a Smith or even a Tatum are all going to be great talents at the number four spot. It's not the same when the Suns took an Alex Lynn because Victor Oladipo is off the boards.
Yeah, I just, to me, with each of those names you mentioned, the question marks get larger and larger. And that's the problem with falling from 2 to 4, is you go from likely a sure thing to hoping it's a player that has an impact in the future. But you can mark this down on the proverbial tape. I realize we don't use tape anymore. It's digital. I get it. But mark it down. I actually think what the biggest wild card with Philly is them completely trading out of that pick to get proven talent and somebody that we don't have on our radar coming in and picking a Josh Jackson at 3. And you know what? I could be totally wrong. It would not be the first, second, or 150th time that I was totally wrong when it came to the NBA in one way or another, that Josh Jackson is the guy. But to me, he just seems like he fits what you need in terms of defense. He's good enough offensively. He's just got the ability to hold down that small forward spot for years to come in a way that Sean Marion did for the last great Suns team.
So I want to talk, because you kind of spoke to this, about how it's so much more guaranteed that you get a great talent at number 2 as compared to number 4. So going back, and we'll start this in 2003.
Are you interested in some really creative t-shirt designs that show your love of the Phoenix Suns, as well as your support of the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast? Go to sunsupodcast.com and check out all of our gear. The link's at the top of the page where you can pick yourself up some Suns Solar Panel merch. Again, just go to sunspodcast.com.
The number two overall pick was Darko Milicic. The number four, Chris Bosh. 2004, the number two overall pick, Omeka Okafor. The number four pick, Sean Livingston. 2005, number two pick, Marvin Williams. The four pick was Chris Paul. In 2006, 2007, the number two pick did end up being better. In 2008, you had Michael Beasley at number two, Russell Westbrook at number four.
I'd still take Beasley every time over Russell Westbrook.
Sure.
If you spend any minute, if you spend any time with Michael Beasley, you know the contact high is just amazing.
No comment. In 2009, you have Hashim Thabeet, who was taken second overall. Tyreke Evans was taken number four. In 2011, you had Derek Williams, who was taken number two overall. Tristan Thompson, number four. 2015, D'Angelo Russell, number two. Kristaps Porzingis, number four overall. Brandon Ingram in 2016, number two. Dragan Bender, number four overall. And obviously the Bucks still... the jury's still out on whether or not Dragan Bender is going to be that high of a prospect, but Brandon Ingram didn't end up being. All I'm saying is, if you look at the history of number two picks, they fall short a lot. And if you go back to any draft, you find a ton of talent that's up there at the top. And all year long, we've been told, this draft is so loaded. This draft is so loaded. This is the most loaded draft in like 15 years. And then all of a sudden, when we don't get the number two pick, we're like, we're doomed. Get the fuck out of here with that.
I don't disagree. We're not doomed, but I think what happened, and I'll speak for Suns fans all over the world, just because they're not here and I am, it comes down to the fact that we continually feel like we're second-class citizens in the NBA, that the greatest thing that we can brag about is we have the fourth highest winning percentage in NBA history. That's great. That and $50 will get you, $50. Like, there's nothing that the Suns have that has shown they've ever had any luck in the NBA, or that the basketball gods, whatever you want to call it, have shined down on them. There's a lot of misery in terms of being a Suns fan over a 50-year period. And this was just another thing where it was just the fact that it was constantly in your mind that, okay, one or two, that's why they're losing. It's going to be a guy that'll change the franchise, it'll change the luck, and then you wind up getting the draft lottery, and it's, we wound up fourth, all right? And in reality, like we've talked about, like we've laid out, fourth in this draft is not bad. There's a guy there that you can likely get that will change this franchise, will have a large impact. The question is, if you're a Suns fan that believes in Ryan McDonough or one that doesn't, because there are two very distinct camps, either where you truly believe in him or you think he's awful. There's like no in between when it comes to Ryan McDonough with Suns fans. Just go try to praise Ryan McDonough on Twitter and you'll find out really fast how vast that pendulum swings. But so that's what it comes down to, whereas if you wind up with pick one, you feel like, wow, okay, finally something went our way. And it's really tough to screw up the first pick in the NBA draft when there's a consensus superstar there at Markelle Fultz, where most people feel that's the case. So it really is all about perception and the baggage of the past that has to do with this more than anything. And please, 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 don't say that it was rigged. I joked about it in a piece on Bright Side of the Sun that the NBA draft lottery could potentially, in a half percentage point, be rigged when I was talking about how the Suns have no luck. And if you thought that there is no such thing as luck, but you thought that maybe the NBA does have influence over the draft lottery, that the Suns would never actually be the ones to actually catch a break, it would be the Lakers, and the Suns would probably wind up at four. Well, a commenter on Bright Side of the Sun basically said, I was irresponsible for claiming the NBA draft lottery is rigged. Let me make it very clear. I don't think the NBA draft lottery is rigged. It would be a massive conspiracy that could take down the league and an accounting firm that validates that this is in fact, an untampered with process. Now, what I do believe in is karma in basketball, and that the quote-unquote basketball gods are there, that there is an influence, a cosmic influence, that does have an impact on things. And the Suns basically spit in the eye of that by losing on purpose and shutting people down. I think that has more of a chance of actually being true than that the draft lottery was rigged.
Let me talk about the damn Sixers. I'm so tired of the Sixers being at the top of the draft and just year after year whiffing on a pick and just being there regardless. Like, I'm so tired of hearing about the process and blah, 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 when year after year, all they do is make the dumb decision and keep drafting the same position over and over and over again, it not working out, their players not developing properly, and then they ship them off before they have to sign them an extension. And then the next year, they're back at the bottom because they don't develop any of their damn players and none of their players can stay on the court. I am so tired of the Sixers being in the draft lottery. So if there is something to that point of the basketball gods looking down on the Suns, why are the Sixers up there?
Well, because of what you said. It's not like it's turning into great success. It's not like the Sixers keep finding their way to the top of the draft lottery and they're winning and they're figuring it out. Look, the Sixers will be fine because Adam Silver installed the Colangelos there. Now, if you want to talk about influence of the league, that's where you see it. The league said, this is getting asinine. We can't have one of our major markets continually suck on purpose as a strategy. We're going to bring in Jerry Colangelo, who we have the utmost respect for, and he can choose who he wants as his GM, likely his son Brian. Which was what happened, and they'll turn it around. You know what I'm sick of is hearing Philly fans bitch and moan that they have the Colangelos. I'd take the Colangelos back in a heartbeat, and so would 75% of Phoenix. All right? This is another thing couldn't say when working for the team. We can put it in that segment of the show. I would take the Colangelos back in a heartbeat, and you've got Philly sitting there and their fans complaining, oh, we can't stand the Colangelos. Why do we have the Colangelos? These guys don't know what they're doing. They do. They were in a first-class organization here in Phoenix for 40-plus years and wound up winning more than they lost, all right? The Suns have been wandering in the desert since the Colangelos left and haven't made the playoffs in 7 straight years. That wouldn't have happened under Jerry Colangelo. He wouldn't have let it happen. And Brian Colangelo as a GM wound up finding some immensely great talent that helped this Suns team for years, for decades. So I do not want to hear another Philly fan complain about the Colangelos. We're happy to take them. We'll send you Lance Blanks if we can find him. We'll send a search party out to try to find Lance Blanks. You can deal with him for 3 years like we had to, and we'll happily welcome the Colangelos back in the fold here in Phoenix.
So we're going to take this over to some mock boards that we found online. I want to start this off with Dave King because he's not here, but on Bright Side of the Sun, he put up his mock board, which has the Celtics taking Markelle Fultz, number 1 overall, the Lakers taking Lonzo Ball, number 2 overall, the Sixers taking Jason Tatum, number 3 overall, and the Suns getting Josh Jackson at number 4.
Wait, we trust Dave King? Like, we're using him as a source that we should trust in our mocking the draft segment? I noticed you didn't use my title, but I was going to throw it in here anyways. But like, we're going to use Dave as some kind of source on knowing this. His finger in the wind and goes, "Yeah, Tatum could go 3."
Well, here's the thing. So you look at the other drafts, right? So taking this over to Bleacher Report with Jonathan Wasserman, really respected in the industry. He has a Boston Celtics with Fultz again, number 1. I'll just stop saying number 1. Number 2, Lonzo Ball going to the Lakers. He has the Sixers taking Jason Tatum, and he has the Suns taking Josh Jackson.
So what you're saying is Dave just looked at Bleacher Report and copied what they had. All right, now I trust Dave.
No, it has to do with a lot of people out there thinking that the Sixers are getting tired of taking best player available every single time and trying to, you know, they have their core already. They already have their Jonathan Simmons and their Joel Embiid and their Dario Saric. They know what they're building around, right? You know, they have their 3-and-D guy with a Robert Covington. So what do they need? They need some damn scoring around Jonathan Simmons. You know, they need somebody that can get buckets, because at the end of the day, it is about the team that gets more buckets than the other team. And the one thing that Jason Tatum does well is he gets buckets. The part that I'm surprised about is that there aren't more people having the Suns taking either Fox or Smith or an Isaac, because Isaac and those two point guards right there, like, they are all tremendous talents.
You can't take a point guard at that spot, because
sure you can.
You can't, because they're not guaranteed quality guys, and you've got a guy that, we'll get into this more, but you got a guy sitting there in Eric Bledsoe that's a borderline all-star. I think it's asinine that you'd waste the fourth pick on a point guard at that point. And you've got Tyler Ulis. If you believe in him developing, then why would you possibly reach for a point guard at four?
Because to your Tyler Ulis point, I do think that Tyler Ulis was one of the steals of the draft, but I think that we all kind of collectively agree that at best, Tyler Ulis, because of his size and maybe a few other factors, is probably going to be a long-term backup guard. He could prove us all wrong. He could be the next Isaiah Thomas. Probably not going to happen. I don't think that's what you bet on. I don't think you bet on Tyler Ulis being the Suns' point guard of the future. If you look at the ages of everybody on this roster, is that who is the odd man out of everybody? Who are you building around? You are building around Booker. You are building around Chris. You are, you know, probably building around TJ Warren, depending on whether or not you're in that camp. But regardless, all the ages are the same. You look at Eric Bledsoe, and this is the time that if the Suns are saying we're really going to be competing in 2020, you aren't going to be doing that with a 32-year-old Eric Bledsoe with injury problems. You trade him and you get that point guard of the future. And Aaron DeFox, you know, a lot of people think that he is going to be really good, that he could be the next John Wall. Whether or not he ever is, he has all the abilities to do so. He's the best defensive guard that is available right there. So if you're looking for a player that you're going to pair with a Devin Booker, you pair him with a backcourt mate that can defend.
So you want to get rid of a known quantity in Eric Bledsoe to take a chance on Fox, who may or may not wind up being a quality player. He may never ever be as good as Eric Bledsoe, let alone be as good as John Wall. And you want to waste, potentially with Josh Jackson sitting on the board, I would say waste that pick on a point guard.
That is saying if Josh Jackson is off the board. Josh Jackson is on the board, you take Josh Jackson. Let's not get this twisted. We're talking about if Josh Jackson isn't on the board, that there are options. But well, I do you, think you with were, Eric Bledsoe, he simply doesn't fit the timeline. So if Josh Jackson is off the board, you have to start looking at other options. And there are a ton of really good point guards in this draft. You know, whether or not they are going to be the next Eric Bledsoe, it doesn't matter, because you're never going to win with an Eric Bledsoe, because he simply doesn't fit the timeline.
Well, at that point, if I'm sitting there and point guard's my best option, that's when I start going, does somebody behind me really want to trade up? Can I go Bill Belichick on this and trade back and accumulate some additional picks in what's supposedly the deepest draft in since the dawn of time? I don't know. There's been a lot of hyperbole about how deep this draft is. I start to think about, do I trade back? Because then I can maximize what I'm getting out of this draft. I would consider that if I'm sitting there and my best option is probably DeAndre Fox. I'm going to go after trading back at that point.
And that's not a bad option, right? So they could trade back with the Kings, for example. The Kings really need a point guard. They could trade back with the Kings, which, you know, they've been able to take advantage of the Kings in prior drafts, so why not do it again? And then you can take an Isaac, and then for the love of God, I cannot pronounce this guy's name, but that, you know, that French point guard, Nitakaria or whatever his name is.
Just say the French point guard. Everybody will know what you're talking about.
Do you know how to pronounce his name? I'm serious, though.
Do I look like a guy that knows how to pronounce anything right? Like, I butchered the English language, let alone French.
So you spell his last name Ntilikina, Ntilikina.
God, I hope they don't draft him, because not only will I not be able to pronounce it, I won't be able to spell it when I'm writing Suns articles. That could end a lot of careers right there, just that name.
So are you, if Josh Jackson's off the board and the Suns say, you know what, because we're going to talk a little bit about Ryan McDonough's comments, who he went on a radio show and he was asked about the core of the Phoenix Suns moving forward. And one name that he left off was an Eric Bledsoe. One name that he kept on was a TJ Warren. Depending on how you want to read into that, it looks like the Suns, in my opinion, are going to be going after a point guard.
You want to know how I read into that? I read into it that he was asked a question and he, on his feet, trying to go through all the guys on his roster, inadvertently forgot Eric Bledsoe because he was just going through a bunch of young guys' names. I think he named Tyler Ulis before he ever named TJ Warren on that list. Like, I don't think he had a prepared list in front of him, and he on purpose forgot to mention Eric Bledsoe, because GM 101 is you don't telegraph the guy who you're going to try to get rid of, because it makes it tougher to get appropriate value when other teams know that you're trying actively to get rid of a guy and you're openly saying that you don't want him around. Phil Jackson's violating this with Carmelo, but I don't think that Ryan McDonough is doing it on purpose. Now, could it have been a Freudian slip where he actually is considering moving Bledsoe and just it was a Freudian slip? Yeah, that could have been the case, but let's not read too much into it. It's fun conjecture, but I don't think, knowing Ryan McDonough, I don't think that he would openly tell you that way that Eric Bledsoe is a guy they're looking to deal.
Fair, and maybe you're right. Assuming that you're wrong and the Suns do decide to trade in Eric Bledsoe for whatever reason this offseason, why are you so low on Fox?
I'm not low on Fox. I'm low on the thought of trading Eric Bledsoe for and replacing him with an unknown, talent there. The thing to me is, and yes, this is partly personal. I'm not one that's going to sit here and lie to you and say I'm unbiased. There's nobody that's unbiased, okay? Anybody that tells you that is lying through their teeth. Everybody in this industry has guys they like and guys they don't like, and people that they have relationships with that they get close to. Gotten close to Eric Bledsoe and like the man personally, love the work ethic, and truly believe in the player. So part of it is that. I won't lie about that. That is a large part of what's going on here. But I truly feel that he's on the verge of being an all-star. Now, are you going to be able to, it depends on what you're going to be able to get. And we'll get into trade speculation next week with the Tinder edition in terms of Eric Bledsoe. But if you're getting back top young quality, and let's throw out a name. You find a way to get a Kristaps Porzingis out of the deal in dealing Eric Bledsoe. And you're getting quality young player back. Okay, fine. I can buy into that. You get that guy. Plus, you now can draft the point guard of the future. I understand that path. Do I accept it? Yes or no, but I understand that path. If you're just trading Eric Bledsoe to trade Eric Bledsoe so you can have a Fox on your roster and hope it works out, I don't want to force a trade because you simply just want to draft this kid and he may or may not be as good as Eric Bledsoe at some point.
I think Eric Bledsoe is a great player. I mean, to me, it just comes down to Eric Bledsoe not fitting the timeline.
I get that. I get that. But at this point, do we really even know what this team's timeline is? If Devin Booker keeps growing at the rate that he is as a player, if Marquese Chris takes a step next year, Tyson Chandler actually plays minutes. I mean, they were on pace for 30 or 35 wins this year. I mean, it's not ridiculous to think they could be close to a 500 team next year if these kids progress, and then the following year could be in an even better position. Like, I just, the 2020 timeline got thrown out there by owner Robert Sarver at a season ticket holder event, and we're all kind of looking at that now. But if that could actually be expedited just by the natural growth of some of these young guys, and you have a guy in Eric Bledsoe who's playing at an all-star caliber, is that such a bad thing? Get these kids some experience winning earlier on. Like, my biggest fear is you lose long enough with Devin Booker and these young guys that maybe they don't want to stay. Like, I don't see that for Devin Booker. He's saying all the right things. Like, if you wrote a script of how a guy, a budding superstar in your market, in particular Phoenix, would act and would talk, it would be exactly the way Devin Booker is. But I'm just afraid you have all these young guys, they lose too often, maybe that becomes a habit, or they wind up not wanting to be around long-term because they don't think they're going to win here. I don't want to sit here and think 2020 is the end all be all. And if they lose games until then, well, so be it. It's not going to be a switch that's flipped. This is going to be a gradual build. And if Eric Bledsoe can help you gradually get better, get these young guys into the playoffs earlier rather than later, why not do that? And worry about who the point guard of that future will be as you go along and grow them behind an Eric Bledsoe. I'm not convinced that drafting a Fox and throwing him into the fire year one as your starting point guard is always the best bet on how to grow these guys.
No, and that's valid. You know, you can look at teams that have spent a long time losing and that, you know, they frankly aren't getting better. But I do think at a certain point you have to be realistic about. So let's say, and it's something that we're looking at right now in the playoffs, and it's something that bothering a lot of people, is that we're looking at the Warriors that are just looking like they're sweeping their entire way to the finals. You're looking at the Cavs who are just looking like they're sweeping their entire way to the finals. Let's say the Suns do make the 8 seed next year and they get swept first round. Let's say the year after that, they make it to the second round and they get swept again by the Warriors. Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't try, because that's one thing that I really did give a lot of credit to the Raptors for, is they went all in, and there's no shame in going all in. And if you think you can compete, go all in. But at the same time, you have to be realistic about some of the competition. And because of the way that the cap spiked in the TV money and the free agents who were available, and the reasonable contract that the Warriors happened to have Steph Curry on because of his ankle, that you ended up with these really dominant teams. And, you know, over in the East, you have all these stars who are willing to go and play with LeBron James for pennies on the dollar so that they can go win a ring. So they have these benches that are just, you know, I mean, frankly, not fair. You know, nobody can compete with that because these teams have to pay those players to be on their team. But at some point, I think that the Suns have to look at that and say, you know what, if we are competing at a high level in 3 or 4 years, that's right around the time when the Warriors are really good, you know, not going to be this unstoppable force, this gorilla in the room that you just can't beat, because beating your head against a dead wall, that's a really bad term. Not the correct one. That doesn't do you any good. I mean, you can look at the Portland Trailblazers and say, oh, look at them competing. You know, they have a backcourt that can't make it through a screen to save their life, and they just end up getting swept year after year in the first round. Where does that get you? How does that make you any better? If it's me, I want to put the best core I can together. And that's what this is about. This is about putting the best core possible. So when you can compete, you can be the best damn team out there competing, right?
I'm not saying go all in. I'm not saying deal young assets and try to make this team a mid-level team. I'm saying grow with the young guys, but try to get in the playoffs, because name me one great championship team that didn't go, well, okay, maybe you could say this current Cavs team, but who didn't go through the struggle of getting in the playoffs and losing a few times before they got over that hump. I mean, think back, even the Bulls with Jordan went through that and couldn't get through the Pistons for a few years. You need that experience. It teaches you something. It strengthens you. And I think losing one or two times in the playoffs before you're truly a championship contender isn't a bad thing, because it makes you hungry. It lets you know this is the big stage and I want to be better at it. Even the Warriors went through that before they broke through. That's the point I want this young team to get to, is getting there, gaining that experience, and then taking the big step after that. Because if you think the Suns are just magically going to flip the switch when the Warriors all of a sudden fall off the cliff and they're going to be able to go from not making the playoffs to winning a championship, you're delusional. And not just you, Tim, any fan is completely bat bleep crazy. I'm not going to curse, but you know, you're nuts if you think that it's just going to happen overnight like that. You need to tier and build to that. And if Eric Bledsoe can help you get in and get these guys experience while you groom a younger point guard, then so be it. I'd rather go that route than try to live in this fantasy land where you're going to have a bunch of 18, 19, 20, 22-year-olds that all of a sudden in 1 year go from not making the playoffs to winning a championship. It's just not going to happen that way.
And, you know, I'm not a good enough of a draft expert to know who's coming out next year and the point guard class, if you will. that's coming out in subsequent years where maybe the Suns can grab a young point guard and develop him from there. But if you do think that De'Aaron Fox, I should say, is possible, you know, point guard of the future, I think you swing. But, you know, at the end of the day, Espo, like, we aren't the GMs, right?
No, you're right. If you truly believe that Fox is the guy, that he's going to be John Wall 2.0, then okay, you take that swing, you deal Eric Bledsoe, and you hope that you're right. The problem here, and I mentioned this on a few podcasts over the last week, is Ryan McDonough is on a ticking clock. It's not like he has a six-year deal where he feels comfortable, where he can develop guys. And at some point, that probably has an impact on your decision-making because you realize, well, crap, I've got to make sure that these are the right guys, that we do win, that this is the right core. And I don't know if you take as big of a swing in that case, where I think drafting a Fox or any of the point guards left at four and dealing Eric Bledsoe is taking a fairly big swing that you are 100% right on this guy and he's going to come in year one, impress people at the point guard position.
And that leads us to our next segment, which is talking about a couple of your guys' comments that you leave when we post the episodes over on Bright Side of the Sun. And the first one we have by Guar Guar, and this kind of speaks to your point, Espo. Guar Guar said, this pick is McDonough's job. If it turns out good, he'll stay. If it flops, so will his job.
Well, and that's the toughest thing, because what does it mean if it turns out? Because really, we're talking about 1 year, right? From my understanding, that's where we're sitting. Ryan McDonough has 1 year in his contract. So if this kid has a middling rookie year, do you let Ryan McDonough go at that point? And then this kid 2 or 3 years down the road winds up blossoming into something great? It's the Sam Hinkie conundrum, right? Do you axe a guy after he puts you in a better position? I mean, Lance Blanks left this team more empty than I don't even have an analogy. You know, it's bad when I can't come up with some snarky reference as to how bare it was compared to the way Lance Blanks left it. I mean,
your shot chart on NBA playgrounds.
Okay. Yes, it is bare in my shot chart on NBA playgrounds. This is true. Like, he had less luck and less talent than I had in my dating life in college, all right? He was so bad and had such bad results that he made the last 10 years of Nick Cage's IMDb page look like it was a roaring success, all right? That's how bad – there we go. I'm back on track. I'm back, all right? That's how bad Lance Blanks was, and that was the hole that Ryan McDonough had to dig this team out of just to get back to ground to square one. All right, that's how bad it was, and then you've got to build on top of that. Do you really ask him after this if the guy he drafts has a middling year? Because that's a reality. You could. I mean, if this were last year and all you got was Dragan Bender at four and he's out and injured, and when he played it was, you saw flashes, but it wasn't anything that was spectacular. You probably lose your job if you're Ryan McDonough if that happens this year with your number four pick, and I don't know that that's fair.
We got one more comment. Well, we got a bunch of them, but we're sort of running out of time because we got to get to your guys' mailbag. This one was from Tal77 on Bright Side of the Sun. Actually, we'll do two comments. And he says, I listen to Locked On Suns as well, but they're shorter. Espo, you kill me. Your contrast with Dave King, who I really love, is hilarious. And I will go and give you guys a review right now. But just keep on talking Suns. Tim, you're a perfect host. And I even love it when you talk about things non-basketball related. I'm from Israel and manage a Suns fan page on Facebook called Disgruntled Phoenix Suns Fans. And I always share yours and Locked On Suns podcast there, getting good reviews here. It's hard to keep track back to news from the Suns. So as much as you can provide is great. Thank you so much for the podcast.
Hey, one out of two ain't bad there. You're listening to at least one good Suns podcast. I'll let you choose which one it is.
And then this one's kind of funny because we talked about it last week. Southern Sun had used the acronym ASMR, and we were trying to figure out what that means. And he came back, and for one, he said, appreciate the shout out, Dave. And then he said, ASMR just means softly spoken words for sleeping and relaxation.
Oh, he broke it down in English for us. Thank you. I know the fans were just hanging on pins and needles for the last week, wondering what that really meant.
Mailbag. And so every week on the show, we post up a section on our Facebook page at Sun Solar Panel, your mailbag questions. And the first one we're going to go to is from Steve White, who asks, with the Suns falling to fourth in the draft, do we think the trade talk around Bledsoe is going to die down? No.
I think we made that really clear in the last 50 minutes of this show. No, absolutely not.
Tal Noahum, and I apologize, Tal, if I butchered your name there. How real is the option to Bledsoe to the Sixers for pick number 3? And do you think it's a good idea to have picks number 3 and 4 and get Jackson and Fox? I'll answer this. I love that. That's great to me.
I love it too. And I threw that out sarcastically on another podcast, just off the top of my head, but the more I think about it, if you're gonna take a swing by getting rid of Bledsoe, having the 3 and 4 pick in this draft isn't a bad way to go about it, and it may be the kind of move that Philly's interested in because they're looking for a young enough guy, but one that has all-star level talent and can help. I could see it happening.
The only thing I worry about with that's the same thing I worry about with last year's draft picks, is that these players are going to be coming under extension at the same time. And obviously you have 4 years to work that out. But I do think that is something that should at least be considered by the front office.
The one thing I worry is, would the Colangelo's actually do anything that could potentially help the Phoenix Suns after the way everything's played out? I'm not quite sure about that.
Hey, that's a valid point. Also, you know, do the Celtics, does their hate for the Lakers run so deep that they draft Alonzo Ball just to piss off the Lakers?
I doubt it. I
be
highly
hilarious.
Doubt it.
Lewis on Facebook asks, if the Suns draft Jackson or Tatum at number 4, who becomes the odd man out at the small forward position, a.k.a. TJ Warren?
I don't know. It's either you're going to trade TJ Warren likely, or you're going to give up on Derrick Jones Jr. probably. That's probably the way it falls. I can't see you keeping all of that all that young talent at one position there at the same time. But it remains to be seen.
I hope it's not one of those situations where we just never develop TJ Warren properly. Like, I think the Suns have completely whiffed on Alex Len's development.
I don't disagree on that. There's probably, I think Alex Len is one of those guys that team number 2 is where he blossoms. He gets a chance. The burden of being the 5th pick overall and being disappointing in a lot of teams' or fans' minds is probably tough on that guy. Now, TJ Warren, I don't know. He seems to have developed quite nicely so far in his progression, outside of having some freak injuries that have cost him time. But if you look at his game, he's gotten better, even on the defensive side. Now, he's not great still, but he's gotten better. So I think he's developing just fine. It's a question of, do you give up on him too early? Does he wind up becoming something just as good as one of these other guys that you're going to draft, and you've now spent 3 years with him and turn around and deal him and lose all that time that you spent developing him?
And so the last one we have on our Facebook at from Valentine Webley, and this actually has to do with the Kings, but kind of a strategic one. They want to know if the Kings are picking at number five, did they draft a Tatum or an Isaac and then select a point guard with number 10? I think that if you are the Kings, that you want to get rid of Darren Collison. And you want to do that as quickly as possible. And if there's a DeFox or De'Aaron Fox, excuse me, still on the draft board, that the Kings are probably going to target that. Also, De'Aaron Fox is one of the few players that has publicly said he wouldn't mind going to the Kings. And the Kings right now are having a real hard time signing any free agents. A lot of agents are out there saying, we don't want our players going over there. And you even have some agents of some of the young college prospects refusing to work out for the Kings. So if you can get a player that fits a need that you can pair with Buddy Hield, that wants to be there or at least doesn't mind being there, the Kings have got to hit a reset button. They started that with Dave Yeager, but they've got to continue that.
What the hell is this? Did this guy accidentally find our page and think it was something called the Royal Court? It's a solar panel. It's a Suns podcast. I'm not talking about the Kings.
I don't mind talking about the Kings.
I'll talk about the Kings when they screw up again and they help the Suns out by trading them draft picks that'll help them be better while the Kings are still stuck in mediocrity. That's when I'll talk about the Kings. Until then, next question.
Well, that's actually the last question. So thank you, everybody, so much for submitting those, the mailbag questions on Facebook. Just go ahead and give us a like there. Before we get out of here, Espo, you mentioned briefly that you had been on a couple of podcasts this last week. What were they? Where can people listen to it?
Oh, I'm not promoting other people. I'm just kidding.
You were on it.
I was on the BOD pod on Almighty Baller Radio, which is Basketball on Demand. It's a different kind of podcast, so listen at your own discretion. I'll say that of it. And then I was on the Superflight podcast, also on the network, and really enjoyed being on that show. Joe is a fun guy to talk to, and we've actually been accused of being each other's podcast doppelgangers, where we sound a lot alike. Now, I don't hear it, but that's because I know my own voice pretty well. But others think that, so it makes for an interesting podcast when you have two guys that sound alike talking NBA. So those were the shows I was on. And then also, thanks again to Zach Clark, who came on our emergency podcast after the draft lottery. He was kind enough to have me on his show on ESPN Tucson, and you can find that podcast, the on-demand version, on ESPNTucson.com.
And you were just all over the radio airwaves recently, huh?
Apparently people just enjoy my mental breakdown on Twitter after the draft lottery, so they just wanted to check in to make sure I was doing all right.
I've been on Joe's podcast, The Superflight, a couple of times. He is a lot of fun to talk to.
Yeah, I actually am in favor of axing Dave and bringing Joe in, but I don't know he knows the Suns well enough.
Ooh, that's a hot take right there.
Dave can take it. After 180 years on this planet, Dave knows how to handle my crap.
So if you guys haven't had a chance yet, for one, make sure that you subscribe to the Drive and Dish podcast. That is my other project, talking all things NBA. But for two, you leave us a review on iTunes. 4 or 5 star.
I'm going to still open the prize closet if you guys leave those reviews and tweet us a screenshot. So let's make this happen, people.
Hey, and if you get a shirt, because we've had a bunch of people that bought the shirts, send us a screenshot of that too. We, for one, I want to know what they look like on people, and for two, we want to push that out on our Twitter as well at Sun Solar Panel. We'll retweet you. Just send us a screenshot. And so, speaking of, where is your screenshot of you and the Ryan McDonough 7 GM served or 29 other GM served every draft day shirt?
Nobody wants to see my fat ass in a T-shirt on Twitter. All right, nobody wants to see that.
Greg, you are a beautiful human being inside and out.
I'm actually going to have lunch with some of my old coworkers at the Suns. Maybe I'll bring it down there and try to get Ryan to hold it up. It probably won't happen, but maybe I will. I don't know.
Hey, well, tell Ryan I said hi.
I don't know that they're going to let me within 100 feet of Ryan McDonough after our podcast lately. I may be persona non grata over there. I don't know.
I met Ryan McDonough a couple of years ago at an Orlando Magic game down in Orlando, actually. It was a while ago, but super approachable. He was traveling with the team. It was back when Markieff Morris was on it. Super approachable. It's funny, though. You ever had that situation where you just look at somebody and they look like money?
They look like money?
Yeah.
Every time I ran into Robert Sarver, when I worked there, he looks like money because he's a banker and he's got a lot of it. So I think you're talking about it in a different way. I think you're talking about it in the swingers, you're so money kind of way, but I went the other route.
No, I met Ryan McDonough and I looked at him. I was like, that guy just looks like money. I met Peter Buck of REM a few years ago in Tucson, and I met him at some little festival he was playing after REM broke up. But Peter Buck really looked like money. Every once in a while, you just meet these guys that look like money, and that's what Ryan McDonough was. So anyway, if you see Ryan or you have a way of telling Ryan that Tim said hi, please do so. If he wants a picture that I took with him, I'd be happy to email it to him. I just need his personal email address.
Stalker.
And go over to sunshow.com. And if you want to pick up a t-shirt, if you want to say hello, whatever it is, do that.
We are PHX.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.